Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable for this Tuesday morning. It is the 23rd of February, and we are delighted to have you with us, to have you listening to our program this morning. I am very happy to introduce the following individuals. Let me just remind you, before we do that, let me just remind you that you can join the program. panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you and, you know, check in and know what you think about the issues we're discussing this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning. Hello. How are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm fine. I knew that it was going to snow later in the day, so even though the ground was very slushy this morning, I got out there and I did it, but I didn't do the usual thing. I just sort of walked back and forth.
Yeah, pacing.
Back and forth. You know what I mean?
Like an expectant father on the second floor of the hospital waiting for
exactly
the nurse to
right.
emerge. Yes.
Exactly right.
In some 1950s movie that I have suddenly thought up. I don't know. I guess it's a little different now, isn't it? Not being a father, I don't know about any of that. So anyway, Mike Spain is with us. He is the former Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, and it looks like a nice day out there. It feels mild. It seems like spring is trying to crash through. I hope so.
Yes, we hope. warming temperatures, lots of sun. That seems to be good. We'll all take that, I believe. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. It's winter, and I got as far as the end of the driveway to bring the garbage can out. That's it, man. I'm in bed for the rest of the day.
to emerge when the COVID gods tell you you can.
As my mother says, bears are the smartest animals. They hibernate in winter.
Absolutely. J.P. Miller is here from the Empire Report. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, Joe. Is it Mike Bowen I should be thanking for the music this morning of Daft Punk?
I believe it is Sarah LaDuke this morning. Daft Punk, who...
Sarah LaDuke this morning.
Yeah, announced they are breaking up and dissolving the band and retiring the helmets. And yes, we'll be hearing their music this morning.
Okay, let me say, I love Daft Punk. And for listeners that can spare a couple minutes away from WAMC, which not everybody can, but if you want to listen to an album from front to back, it's very few rock albums where you can listen to the whole album all the way through and the whole thing is amazing. Random Access Memories by Daft Punk. They won the Grammy for Album of the Year in 2014. It's a phenomenal album. You can't help but like it. And so I guess I shouldn't be promoting them, but it's amazing.
No, why not? That's great. people need Daft Punk in their life, so that's great. Thank you. Yes, we'll be playing that this morning. We have the whole playlist. If you want to check it out, go to wamc.org/roundtable, and the playlist is listed there. Okay, let's get started with what's going on and what's happening right now as we speak. Is they're getting ready for a hearing, a Senate hearing, to hear the story of the Capitol riot and who is responsible. The public inquest into the deadly January 6th riot at the Capitol begins a new phase today when four law enforcement officials, three of whom resigned their posts and some of whom have never before spoken publicly about the attack, face lawmakers aiming to uncover what led to the violence and prevent future unrest. Today's hearing before members of two Senate committees could also become a battleground for competing narratives over what prompted the riot and who was responsible for it, a question that has become even more pointed following former President Donald Trump's acquittal on an impeachment charge earlier this month. Trump's allies in Congress and beyond have sought to downplay Trump's role in gathering his supporters in Washington and spreading the false claim that he, not President Biden, won the November election, facts that led to bipartisan impeachment proceedings. Instead, they have sought to blame lapses by Capitol security officials and the congressional leaders they report to for the building's invasion. That has heightened the drama surrounding the expected testimony of former House Sergeant-at-Arms Paul Irving and former Senate Sergeant-at-Arms Michael Stegner, who resigned quickly after the riot was suppressed. Neither man has spoken publicly about their experiences and decision-making before and during the riot. The committee, chaired by Amy Klobuchar, chairs the Senate Rules and Administration Committee. Alan Chartok.
This is really going to be awful. Here's what. Those spineless, feckless Republicans in the Senate who are scared out of their skins about losing in a primary are going to have to obey their worst instincts and go to the bad spot of their soul. And they're going to do things like blame Nancy Pelosi for the riot, that she wasn't prepared, as opposed to, you know who they should be pointing at, the guy who said, I'll march with you, you should go down there, you should raise hell. They will do anything but recognize that, because it would mean the end of their political career, and that guy, Trump, has made it clear. So, you know, there'll be battles. You know, they sat there and they watched as people got killed. They got watched. They watched as people came on and did these terrible things to each other. It's just awful. And, you know, I think we're going to be in for it to watch what happens.
Rosemary.
I'm interested to hear Alan, because I argued this the other day when we were first talking about the possibility and the importance of a commission. And I said, yeah, we're going to just hear this deflection and this blame that's pointing away from Donald Trump. And he argued then that it was important to hear all the facts and to get more out on the record. So adopting now, switching sides here, I am looking forward to hearing from the police officials who have complained and lost their jobs. I mean, the sergeant at arms, but basically the law enforcement officials who are involved and who know exactly what happened. And we've not heard them in person before. I'm curious about that. I think, yeah, it's ridiculous to try to blame McConnell as well as Pelosi for security issues. It will be interesting to get that on the record. Journalists are already working on this. The New York Times has had some interesting writing about why it took 2 hours to mobilize the National Guard, for example. And I think that it's going to be a ridiculous political show, but boy, didn't you know that anyway, if it involves Republicans in the Senate, that's just absolutely what happens. But, you know, they looked really bad at Merrick Garland's hearing today. I know we're going to talk about that later, perhaps. But they were venal and blaming and stupid. And he's a grown-up. You know, he's like Biden. He just made them look small. And I have hopes now here, because Amy Klobuchar is part of the reason, that she will direct this in a way that we really might get some information.
Well, right of reply, I agree with most of what Rosemary just said. However, I still think, and I think that the idea of having this hearing is a good one. But I do know what's going to happen. So I haven't changed my mind at all.
One of the things, Mike Spain, that I find interesting is that we're seeing this very, I don't know how slow the turn is, but during the impeachment, many of the senators were taking cover and saying, well, we couldn't possibly impeach the president because he is not the president anymore, and we don't believe that this is constitutional, and that was the cover. And now the cover seems to be changing as we go here, because now they're blaming lapses by Capitol security officials and the congressional leaders they report to for the invasion of the Capitol building. So this seems to be a shifting narrative from the GOP side.
Oh, sure. You know, and as much as Amy Klobuchar pledges that this should be a bipartisan effort to really look into what happened and how to fix it, you got to remember that Josh Hawley, who was one of the encouragers of the crowd on that day on January 6th, and Ted Cruz, they're going to be asking questions. And I think you're right. They're trying to switch the narrative now away from what caused this angry crowd to invade the Capitol and focus on lapses that there might have been in security. And, you know, and it is interesting to see that piece in the New York Times yesterday about how it took 2 hours to get the National Guard alerted. you know, responding to it and some of the political factors and how some people didn't want that visual of the National Guard outside the Capitol on that day. And that's why they weren't there ahead of time, even though there was plenty of reason to be. But you know, we can all talk about, I mean, it's important to talk about Capitol security. It's important to talk about ways to fix this, ways to make it safer, and to, in the process, protect our democratic institution of the Congress. But it is. It's exactly as you say, Joe. They're steering it away. First, it was an excuse that it wasn't constitutional to impeach a former president. Now they're steering this towards lapses in security, blaming the leadership, blaming whoever they can. And it just, and I understand that the committee or the commission that Nancy Pelosi tried to get going is running into all kinds of problems as lawmakers argue over what its purview would be and how it's going to go. So, you know, it's a smokescreen. All you got to do is come up with another narrative and talk about that instead of the real narrative. And you know, people look at it as equal, and it isn't equal, but it's the smokescreen that we've seen. It's a very effective technique, and it's kind of sad to watch. But I'll be curious to hear what happens.
J.P. Miller.
I agree with the other panelists that it will be fascinating to hear from the House and Senate Sergeant-at-Arms. Both have been silent since the insurrection, both who, you know, kind of resigned in shame after the events of January 6th. I am excited that Senator Klobuchar is going to chair the committee. She's known to be both bipartisan and moderate. It is certainly, I think most Americans believe it's Donald Trump's fault that the insurrection happened, but there were clearly, anybody that watches the video of what happened, there were clearly very serious security lapses when you see the thousands of insurrectionists going against, you know, a couple dozen cops, if that, that were supposedly protecting the Capitol at that time. Something else that I think about as we're going through this is the 9/11 Commission report that was published by a bipartisan panel after September 11th was one of the most fascinating documents, historical documents, that I've ever read. And I really hope that these hearings will eventually lead to a January 6th commission report where we can get Democrats and Republicans together to write the definitive narrative as to what happened on January 6th, what caused it leading up to it, so that we have that enshrined in our history. I loved reading the 9/11 commission report. I hope we have the same thing for January 6th.
Yeah, but JP, you had people on both sides there who were people of integrity, including the Republicans, of course, who just did what they had to do. But I don't see that here. I mean, I think people's political careers are at stake because of this guy who apparently we're now reading, studied Hitler. So it's, we've always said he was like Hitler, but now we hear from one of his ex-wives that he kept reading Hitler because he was so interested in what he had done. No, I think these guys are pathetic politicians, the U.S. senators, the Republicans.
JP?
I think, yeah, Flying Ted and Josh Hawley are pathetic. I agree with you. but if you remember the 9/11 Commission report, I don't believe it was written by current office holders. I believe it was former office holders. And I would be a huge advocate of having a historical document similar to that for this event, because I don't know, for whatever reason, I found that 9/11 Commission report to be fascinating. Yep. And we should have a factual document written in a bipartisan manner as to simply what happened and how did it happen.
Rosemary, I know you have thoughts on this.
So is the Warren Commission fascinating. History's fine. I'm all for it. I'm an academic, too. However, we've skipped a step here. There's criminal activity. There's still a threat to this country. And the most encouragement I heard was Merrick Garland, again, yesterday, saying he's going to continue to look into it. I want prosecutors looking at it, not office holders in the Congress and not former office holders in the Congress, prosecutors who will stop what's going on. Instead, what I see is, you know, Trump is going to make another heroic speech this weekend as if nothing had happened. And he'll make this case all over again. How does he get to do that?
Well, I think I've asked you this question before, and I unfortunately don't remember your answer, so I'm going to ask it again. But can you do both?
You can, but are we? Where's what's going on? All I know about is this Amy Klobuchar thing today. That's it.
Mike?
Well, no, you're right. The 9/11 Commission proceeded, but so did intense criminal prosecution and military action in response to 9/11, too. And I of course, both can happen simultaneously. And in fact, maybe if the criminal prosecution and investigation takes place, the January 6th Commission would be able to do that in a much less partisan, heated way and kind of step away from and where the temperature can be lowered, take away the current politicians who are gaming to get the nomination in 2024, et cetera.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We would love to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. And we welcome your thoughts. We are already getting letters in. We'll go to those when we come back. Plus, we would love to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Shartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, JP Miller, and Mike Spain. We just ask that you keep your letters short, to the point, and on topic. All of those are important, the short, the to the point, and the on topic. And send them to the right address, panel@WAMC.org. And, also don't, you know, proofread them and don't use abbreviations. And those are the rules. I know it seems like a lot, but it's really not. We'll be back after this news from the BBC. Four minutes past 9 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, the 23rd of February, and we welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. We are talking about the Capitol riot and the Senate hearing that is taking place today. We have some letters. We'll go to those and hear more thoughts from our panel as we do it. Ellen says the 9/11 Commission report did not squarely put the blame of the Saudis, and it did not change our relationship with the Saudis. That from Ellen. We go to Dan. Good morning, friends. Anybody with a Twitter account knew that the excrement was going to hit the whirling blades on January 6th. You can bet your last dollar that the powers that be let it play out, with both sides hoping it would advance their agenda. Then there is this from Tom, who says, any chance we could change the false claim label to fake claim or fake news claim when referring to the former president's, well, fake claim that the election was stolen from him? That would be mighty nice. Calling a lie false claim is too hoity-toity to have the power to refute in kind the simple fake message that the election was stolen. It actually may empower the lie in some weird way.
I like it.
Yep. All right, let's see. We go to Beth. In order to push back rioters, why didn't the U.S. Park Police use the horse unit that they deployed on January 1st in Lafayette Square or on January 6th to quell the sedition? Investigate that, Amy Klobuchar, please. Then we go to Bob, who says, I agree with Mike Spain that the panel investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol should be helmed by retired statespersons. George Bush, Barack Obama would be my choices. Why would they want to get involved in that? But you never know.
Oh, yeah, that'd be really nonpartisan.
And they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
What's the value of having a past out of office politician if you're going to pick someone like that? Both of them are rather, anyway, you get my point.
Yeah. Partisan. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That is what I have. Go ahead.
If I could, I'd just like to mention the fact that I was reading yesterday that Clarence Thomas apparently was appointed by George H.W. Bush.
Right.
And, his performance has been, I think, worthy of impeachment himself. He's really, getting crazier and crazier. The idea of putting a Bush who would appoint, now it's not the same Bush, of course, because the other one's dead, but in charge of getting to the truth here is somewhat extraordinary to me. We do know that the present Bush camp, the existent one, has no use for Donald Trump at all, and we've seen lots of evidence of that.
Clarence Thomas came up in the news yesterday because of the murmurings and the dissent over the Supreme Court deciding not to hear the Pennsylvania election fraud case that went before the that was proposed to go before the Supreme Court, and then they decided not to take the case.
Along with Alito and what?
Three justices said the court should have used the case to provide guidance in future elections. According to the dissent, the court's brief order gave no reasons for turning down the case, which as a practical matter marked the end of Supreme Court litigation over the election. And as just mentioned, it was Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch who dissented, saying the court should have used it to provide guidance in future elections. The dissenting justices acknowledged that the number of ballots at issue in the case was too small to affect President Biden's victory in the state. But the legal question the case presented about the power of state courts to revise election laws was, they said, a significant one that should be resolved without the pressure of an impending election. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled in September that ballots sent before Election Day could be counted if they arrived up to 3 days after. On two occasions before the election, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to intervene in the case, though several justices expressed doubts about the state court's power to override the state legislature, which had set an Election Day deadline for receiving mailed ballots. Alan.
Well, we've been over it over 1,000 times, and the court's pretty well laid out where they are on these things. I mean, some justices listen to the evidence and have integrity, and some don't. And we've just mentioned a couple that don't.
Mike.
Yeah, to me, not taking that case out of Pennsylvania affirms. Is actually the majority of the court affirming the responsibility and the authority of courts, in this case, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, to protect voters' rights and step in when highly unusual circumstances happen, like a pandemic that interferes with people's ability to get to the polls or to get their ballots in the mail and the post office to get them to the, to the Board of Elections on time. And it's completely reasonable. And it's it certainly is a back and forth. The legislature certainly sets the election law, but if the election law doesn't work and people's voting rights are going to be hindered, then the courts can step in to ensure that the voters' rights are protected, and that's their responsibility. So to me, it's a positive thing that they didn't take it, and it's also positive in the sense that we're done with Trump now. Let's move on.
Rosemary?
Okay, so these were really interesting court cases yesterday. Above all, I feel great joy that Trump lost hugely. Two cases yesterday, he lost in really big. He's got to turn over his financial records, and the Supreme Court is definitely done with election 2020. But they also took up, at the behest of these conservative, super conservative judges that you're talking about, three of them, the issue of who really controls elections. Gorsuch, who is one of the three, went so far as to say that even Gore versus Bush. Played a role in this, that this showed that the Supreme Court could step in to govern something about state elections, even though that case was very plainly marked. This is for a one-time only. This is only about Bush and Gore. But he still used it, which is unusual, and the New York Times pointed that out. This isn't my original thinking. But what it shows is that three of them are open to the idea that, yes, the Supreme Court can come in when there's even an emergency like a pandemic and can overrule the state courts, which would lead – it would go directly from the – intent of the state legislatures, which are overwhelmingly Republican at this point, to the Supreme Court, which is, again, overwhelmingly conservative. And six out of the nine members have voted that down and said, no, you know, we uphold the superiority of the state courts to have a say over us when it's an election matter. I think that's, like, hugely important, even more so than Trump being squashed, because the Republicans have not stopped their efforts to suppress voting. There are proposals in, a number, I've forgotten the exact number, Georgia. But a number of states right now. Yeah, Georgia and other places like that to repress voting. And that means it isn't going to be left up just to Republican state legislators. It will be up to state courts and to federal appeals courts. And that's good news for liberals, for people who believe that everyone should have the right to vote.
Don't you think we ought to make a distinction between conservatives on the court and political prostitutes on the court? I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, what Clarence Thomas and Alito and these other guys are doing are expressing, you know, contemporary political alliances as opposed to reading the law. And I think your point is very well taken, Rosemary, that the conservative element is a conservative court. Are sticking to their guns about what's right and what's wrong. It's one of the reasons I think lifelong tenure on the court really does work.
JP?
I was excited that they decided not to take the case, that they don't have any interest in getting into the 2020 election results. I do, though, think that these election laws that we have, we are really, really, really lucky that none of these state elections, Pennsylvania, Virginia, were close between Biden and Trump. Because if they were close, then these decisions would be a lot more important. You look at what happened in the 22nd district in New York. You know, looking at state election laws and what votes are going to count, I think states need to continue to be vigilant and try to make very clear ahead of Election Day which votes will count, which votes will not count. I think we're lucky it was not a close election last time.
And for whatever it's worth, JP, because there are people who don't know anything about the 22nd congressional district and what was at stake there. Why don't you just give us a little primer so everybody would know?
Well, it was a closely watched congressional race between Claudia Tenney and Anthony Brindisi, and it took, I don't know, I think, you know, 2 months after the election for them to certify results. And I think they were separated by 19 votes or something like that. Could you imagine if we had a presidential election separated by 19 votes in one state? It would, you better believe it would go to the Supreme Court and they would be deciding it.
Well, the only reason I know about it is because I read about it in the Empire Report.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue and we'll talk more. We've got letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to our panel discussion on the roundtable this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain make up the group. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Robert writes to us and says, I'm glad the tax returns will be released, but why do we think they'll be filled out honestly? Trump lies about everything. He could pay his accountant enough to falsify the return. We'll know more at the end of that audit, though, won't we?
Yeah, I was going to say, hey, go try lying on your tax returns and see what happens to you. They have their ways, you know.
Robert,
please forget about the New York Times already has 10 years of those records and came out with a pretty complete report of what was falsified in those records. Tax accountants will figure that out. And I hope he did falsify them because that's more criminal charges that can be brought against him.
We touched on that yesterday as the news was breaking as we were on the air. But it is interesting, too, because we do know quite a bit because of that New York Times reporting. So even though they will not probably be released for quite a while to the public, we know quite a bit, don't we?
Yeah. And what I wonder is, I think the court, the grand jury in Manhattan, probably all knew what was in the New York Times because they read it in the New York Times, and they probably just waited for these documents to validate or verify it. It might be pretty quick business for them to come out with a decision on whether to indict the former president, and that might happen pretty soon. And then evidence, when you do indict someone, you can use evidence that you've obtained, including tax return information. So we may learn some of what's in those tax returns officially by the indictment.
You will remember, of course, the famous Saul Wachler mm-hmm. ham sandwich analogy. this is... I have a feeling you're not going to get a no bill out of this grand jury. You're quite right, Mike.
Robert writes, mightn't we consider that our ex-president may have, quote-unquote, intentionally avoided a proactive National Guard presence to a known potential problem? Two, a leader in the insurrection has already pled guilty to his charges. Could this be because he's expecting a blanket pardon for his actions and a quote-unquote guilty plea is how to get that?
I don't know who would give them a pardon.
Who's going to give him the pardon?
Yeah, that's what I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as much as I detest the Republicans and what they're doing. It's not out of the question that Pelosi and McConnell did say they didn't want a bunch of armed guards there, that it would look bad, that it would, kind of feed into the idea that, Trump was about to call a military law down upon the country. It's not out of the question. It might be another one of those questions that we'll have a clearer answer to after this hearing today.
Phil writes, how easy would it be to create a national voting holiday? Well, that's an oldie but a goodie. We get that a lot.
Yeah.
Phil asked that question. Easier now
that Democrats.
Yeah.
Easier now that Democrats control both houses because Republicans don't want this. All of those efforts to suppress voting across the country would be a little bit undone by making it easier to vote. This is not in their interest.
Exactly.
But holidays, people still work on holidays. And who are the people that work on holidays? People who do service work, people who work in stores, people who take care of elderly people. They all work on holidays. And those are the people that have trouble getting out to the polls. It has to be more than just a holiday.
Well,
it does, but that's an important first step. You know, even if you put it on a Saturday, it would be Saturday and Sunday. It would be a better solution than having it on Tuesday when everybody works.
2 days is a good
idea. Early voting takes care of that, though.
Yeah.
Early voting, yeah.
I mean,
it does.
Well, and that's the thing that has been, even here in New York, where it has made it a lot easier for people to go and vote. And but you have to make that universal, and you also have to stop the fact that, there's so much voter suppression going on throughout the country.
Yes, Joe. And the fact is that I hate to say it because somebody will write me a mean letter, but, this is a Republican and Democratic issue. The Democrats very well know that if you make it easier to vote, they're going to get more votes because there are a lot of people who are repressed and suppressed. And therefore, you know, the Republicans in both the state legislatures and nationally are opposed to that.
Let's go to other letters here in our time before the top of the break. It seems to me, says Louise, the only way out of this is to pass H.R. 1, the For the People Act, legislation that will repair our democracy and clean out the rot. It's past time for a resurrection of public service as opposed to the gridlock of competing ambition, greed, and corruption that we now see.
Hear, hear. I think that's really excellent idea.
Ryan writes to us and says, can reasonable minds conclude the hearing with Capitol Police should have occurred prior to the impeachment trial? By vetting Capitol security concerns prior to impeachment, the Democrats could have extinguished the GOP's ability to shape the narrative of the riot before the House managers delivered the article of impeachment. By rushing the article to the Senate before the FBI and legislators had finished their inquiries, the Dems damaged the strength of their argument and chance of conviction. Typically, if your case is solid, you don't prosecute before the investigation has been completed, and you can make a more airtight case. It's an interesting letter because it does make some very good points, but I just wonder how much more information would have made that case any more airtight that would have changed the result. But, Alan?
I'll pass. Thank you.
Okay. JP. go ahead. Go ahead, Rosemary.
I think that there is some point to it. The Republicans made that point. They made it in the first impeachment, too, saying you rushed it before there was an investigation. That's fine on the surface. Then look a little bit beneath the surface. In the first investigation, they refused to let any further investigations go on. White House stood up to every subpoena, blocked every chance to get somebody who knew anything, any witness to talk. So, you know, you can't win. And then the second time, I think that the House intended for the impeachment to go on, a trial to go on while he was still in office. Mitch McConnell said, no, we just don't have time for that. And so then you're still in the constitutional dilemma that they say that we are in and why they acquitted him. So there was no good time. It's very nice to argue it, but it's all academic. The intention was to never convict him.
JP.
Rosemary, I couldn't have said it better myself. I agree with you. I also think that, you know, if you were to poll the U.S. Senate on who was going to convict and who was not going to convict a month before they voted, my belief is it would have been the same senators voting to acquit, the same senators voting to convict. And right. I'm an advocate of having this thing be done with and letting us hopefully move on and enjoy Joe Biden as president.
Mike Spain.
All I really would say to that is that I agree with both of you.
I like the agreement on the panel this morning, Alan.
I'd like my time back.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Because I passed. We do know that people are writing letters and saying, you know, let it go. Don't talk about Trump anymore. Trump, yeah, I've said it before. I said it yesterday. I want to say it again today. It's not that easy to let it go because Trump brought this country almost to its knees from a fascist perspective. And therefore, we better learn from what he did and how he did it because it's absolutely clear that if things go bad for the Democrats, what you'll have next in 2022 is control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. So you better now find out what happened and who gets the blame. And I believe that's Trump.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. I've seen. If we can talk media coverage for a second, I'm interested in the panel's thoughts on this. It seems like, I mean, not to be too cynical, but I think we know why they're doing it. But the cable networks, let's say CNN and MSNBC, are still leading most newscasts with Trump. And it is, there's a lot. I was watching a program last night, Aaron Burnett from 7 to 8, and the entire 46 minutes of the show was about Trump, with no mention of what the president of the United States, the current president of the United States, was doing or what was happening. And I just wonder if that... So there's a balance, right, Alan? Because I agree with you completely. We have to get to the bottom of what's happening, but by the same token, we also have to know what's happening now, too.
Well, absolutely. And I do think that Biden is a very smart man. He knows full well how to get attention when he wants to.
Right.
He has in the past. But I think he thinks that part of his healing program is to just do it right, do it through the legislature, do it through the Congress, and it'll all work out. I don't think he wants that kind of publicity.
Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that the I'm very interested in how the media will play Sunday's speech by Trump before the conservative PAC. It could be his... announcement that he's basically running for election in 2024 and that he is the head of the party, et cetera, et cetera. And it is news. It's important. It will be discussed on Monday's roundtable, I'm sure, extensively. And yet, I think it has to be balanced against the biggest story that we're facing right now. And I really do think the biggest story that we're facing right now is what we're doing to fight the pandemic, what we're doing with the stimulus package, with the vaccine rollout, and then with just general health and returning the economy to being a robust economy. And those are the biggest stories, and they should be getting the attention that they need so that people know.
Should be, should be. But the fact is...
Right, I know.
But the fact is, as Rosemary always tells us... The newspaper... As Rosemary always tells us, the newspaper editors certainly know what they're doing and what people want, and they're giving people what they want. And I believe, for all kinds of reasons, Trump should be held to account. We should do this stuff because he was so dangerous. But also, people want to hear about what this madman is doing.
Rosemary?
To me, it's not even a debate. You got an ex-president who wants to be president again, who just tried to subvert and attack the government, and now he's going to make his first speech. Oh, hell yes, I'm going to be there.
Of course.
That's front page news. Not even a discussion. And I also don't think that the media is making a mistake in underplaying any of the stories that Mike mentioned. And Biden did get a ton of attention, rightly so, yesterday for that very moving ceremony.
Yeah. Yes.
Empathy, sympathy, sorrow for what happened. Things we never saw under Trump.
Right.
And the media also did a good job in making that very contrast that I just did. So you can do two big stories at the same time. And in fact, we have to. We have three crises right now. We have them right now.
Yep.
We have domestic terrorism, immigration is on fire, and there's Trump. And the fourth one, of course, is the pandemic. There's actually four. So, yeah, we have to cover all of them. And picking one over the other is just dumb. And I thought Aaron Burnett's stories yesterday were right on target and the priorities were correct. So there you go.
Okay. JP, real quick, we have to go to a break, but I just want to get your thoughts before we go.
I don't watch cable news. When I was 12 years old, I watched professional wrestling and I loved it, but I'm done with it. I've seen it before.
You grew up? Yeah.
I grew up. And the fact that CNN is covering Trump all the time is just helping Trump. They might as well be making contributions to the Trump 2024 campaign. They are. That is helping one person, and that's Donald Trump, and they don't care because they're happy to make money.
All right. With that, we'll take a break. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be back. First News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, JP Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org.
Speaking of which, we got one from Janice, a very, very interesting letter.
Yeah.
Said, covering Trump. If media coverage only helps Trump, why was he defeated by Biden? And by the way, if you look at CNN or MSNBC, you don't have any question that they were playing it, at least, at very least, fairly, but they certainly were tough on Trump.
Well, yeah, sure. Anyone else on that? We got this from Tell, who writes, please be more specific in talking about what the ultra-conservatives on the court are up to. They are pushing the never-before-accepted notion that state legislatures are the ultimate arbiters of elections, which actions cannot be reviewed by state courts. Pushed to its extreme, this concept would mean that legislatures could simply overrule the voters and state courts would have no jurisdiction.
Well, I was just going to say on that point that it is heartening to know that the other two conservative appointments to the court recently, Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh, were not part of that trio that was pushing that narrative, or that position. So, I mean, I think that it suggests that while they are all conservative, they're not in unity on a lot of important issues, and they're open-minded, perhaps. And we might see a little more diversity on the court than we had anticipated when Barrett was confirmed.
Alan?
Well, I tried to make the point earlier about, you know, the difference between being a conservative and somebody of ill repute. And, you know, I think that that's the distinction there. These people are conservative, all right. They were recommended by the Federalist Society, and they came right off of that playlist. But they're judges. And, frankly, thank God.
Rosemary?
I don't think we know yet where all their positions are. I mean, reading the court is like putting together a whole bunch of pieces. Like, I'm not convinced Kavanaugh isn't persuaded to this. I've already said he cited Bush v. Gore, which is scary to me. He didn't in this particular case, and I hope there won't be any more election cases for a while. But I don't think we know yet who's in it just to help Republicans and who's in it because they really think this is what's in the Constitution. It's the position of those three judges on this case who dissented was that the Supreme Court needed to lay down some ground rules so that elections wouldn't be as hectic as they were this year, which, as Mike pointed out, doesn't recognize at all that they were hectic because of COVID, which is not a usual circumstance. And so I think it's really encouraging that all of them, even the three who dissented, said leave things as they are, and the ruling is now that things remain as they were, which is state legislatures and then state courts, and only in rare situations like Gore and Bush does it go to the Supreme Court. So I think that we're better off, and I'm seeing everybody behave like good little judges so far.
I am not. And I think when you look at the Clarence Thomases and the Alitos, you're not talking about considered people here. I think this is really disgusting. I think the other judges, I think you're right about. And not because I agree with them, but because they were acting like judges.
Rosemary, anything on that? No?
No, I just
okay.
Well, I just worry that Gorsuch, I mean, frankly, I'm not too impressed with Alito and Thomas's intellect, but Gorsuch seems a little more articulate. He might be sort of the leader of that little pack, and it'll be, as Rosemary says, it's much too early to really conclude how all of these judges are going to be on issues like election reform and election ballot access and other issues unrelated. You know, it just proves that there's a lot we need to find out about these judges.
JP. All right. We'll use this moment of silence too. All right.
Introducing to the Daft Punk
theme. I'm here.
Yeah, there you go. Hello, hello.
Did you want to check in?
I didn't realize initially that it was Amy Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh went against Trump on that decision, but there are those who have said that in the past have alleged that they would be beholden to Trump. And this is a certainly a piece of evidence that shows that neither of them are beholden to Trump and won't always decide with him.
Well, I think the always is the important part of your statement. And we don't. And what the others were saying is really is too early to know on many of these marginal issues what's going to happen.
So meanwhile,
look, it was a big deal, however, and Trump railing against the Supreme Court and Democratic control just was so rich that those judges, Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett especially, went against him. And they went against him big. It was a showy, it was a spurning of his entreaty to them, of his boast that they were there to protect him. They did turn him aside. There's no question about that. Yep. And I enjoyed it immensely.
For once, I'm with you.
The Supreme Court also looking to hear cases on abortion referrals and immigration. While we're talking about the court, we should probably bring that up. That was also news from the court yesterday. Rosemary, thoughts on that? Alan, thoughts on that?
I'm with Rosemary.
A lot of pauses today. I don't know.
I'm with Rosemary.
Yeah, I'm pausing with it because I don't want the Supreme Court dealing with abortion. I think that's a big mistake Democrats have made for a long time. It should be a legislative matter. Make laws about abortion. And of course, the Republicans, again, much smarter than Democrats in their long-run play, took all of these issues down to the state level, and they made laws there in legislatures, which are, you know, Republican-controlled, very anti-feminist. And very anti-choice. So there's bad law, and now it's going to a Supreme Court that's going to quite possibly uphold that bad law.
Right.
Don't forget, Trump had 3 appointees, and he made clear that he wasn't going to put anybody on who is pro-choice. So it's not a good thing. And I hope that what will happen is what very could happen on both the immigration and the abortion cases coming to the Supreme Court is that they'll become null and void and moot, as they say in the courts, because Biden is going to just change the rules. And that's not a long-term solution. Again, it'll make us safe for the next 4 years. Make by us, I mean pro-abortion and pro-immigration. It'll for 4 or for 8 years. But in the long run, there has to be federal legislation on these matters.
JP,
I'm kind of the wait and see mind. This is going to be the first session where we have a you know, decidedly overwhelmingly conservative court. And it'll be interesting to see what Justice Roberts does. He has emerged as more of a swing vote than a conservative vote. And watching this court, they know that they're being watched. And so all of these decisions are going to be very fascinating as they come out.
And Mike.
Yeah, I think Rosemary's right, though. I think the Biden administration will probably rescind that 2019 order by the Trump administration, which prohibited anybody getting federal funds from fully advising women of all of their rights when it comes to birth control, et cetera. And that's what this Trump rule did. And medical ethicists have said you have to give everybody all the options when you advise them. You can't filter it for political reasons or because of fiscal reasons. And that's an important issue. And if it was decided just on that, I don't know how it would go. But I think that the Biden administration is just going to rescind that order and make it unnecessary to have that debate in the court, and that'll just leave it up in the air about what happens in 2 or 4 years when things change.
Let's move on to some other stories here before we go to our bottom of the hour break. Of course, Rosemary was mentioning this a moment ago and talking about the I'm going to hold that because we have a little bit more time. So let me do this one first, which is an interesting story, too, when we talk about President Biden and his cabinet picks. So the one that's being watched right now is Neera Tanden, President Biden's nominee to be the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and was is on the cusp of defeat. The Washington Post writes President Biden was on the cusp of his first cabinet defeat as two closely watched GOP senators announced their opposition to Neera Tanden, his pick to be the nation's chief budget office official, potentially dealing a major blow to an administration that has struggled to fill top posts across the government. Senator Susan Collins and Mitt Romney indicated Monday that they plan to vote against Tanden, citing her intemperate and now deleted social media posts attacking GOP lawmakers. Senator Joe Manchin announced his opposition to Tanden, nominated to the lead the Office of Management and Budget late last week, meaning at least one Republican would be needed to confirm Tanden in an evenly divided Senate. What should we make of this? Alan.
Well, you know, it's easy to be angry at Manchin for his alleged perfidy here. Nevertheless, you know, you got a 50-50 Senate and you got to save the guy. I mean, he is playing to a conservative crowd and he is behaving the way that many Republicans behave. We don't like it. I don't like it. Nevertheless, that's what he's doing. And the Republicans, for their part, know how to stay together. You know, this is a whack across the face for Biden. And they're saying, you know, we're capable of doing this. As for the nominee herself, do you guys all remember who was running management and budget for, you know, for Trump?
Mick Mulardy?
For Trump? You know, it's just extraordinary. This is what happens when you get this kind of divided government and a bunch of people who say, OK, we have to remind him that we are not to be disregarded here. But considering her background and considering everything she brings to it in terms of diversity, I think it's particularly disgusting.
Rosemary?
I think Joe Manchin is right. I don't think she should be the budget secretary, the budget manager, for the same reason I didn't like Mulvaney. She's just nasty and divisive, and her expertise is not so fantastically fabulous that I don't believe Joe Biden can't find another diverse candidate, a woman who knows as much economics as it took Mulvaney to know to do the job. So I'm convinced that Manchin is correct on this. Romney went along with it. And as for Susan Collins, well, I think she must be enjoying the hell out of it, and I would be doing the same thing. If someone wrote nasty little emails about me and now she wanted my vote, I'd be out there bad-mouthing the hell out of her, too. She's getting exactly what she deserves. And I'm sorry, this is not like Merrick Garland being blocked. It is not like Austin, General Austin being blocked. The big ones, the important ones are going through. And Biden is not the first president who's lost one of his cabinet picks. I say cut it loose and go with someone else.
Boy, do we disagree. You know, and the idea that, Rosemary, that you should take out personal pique because somebody said something bad about you as opposed to letting their nomination through, I think is kind of mean-spirited.
Personal peak. I mean, come on. She was saying, oh, Susan Collins is the worst. She's horrible. So now you want to vote? Forget about it.
Well, she is. I've said it too. Nobody stopped me.
Yeah, but you're not asking for her vote now. And if you were, I hope she would.
Well,
she's talking to her friend's Manchin and to Romney saying, hey, you guys want to hold together? You want my vote? Say vote no on this one. I mean, come on. It's politics. And she has not played it right. And she deserves it. And Alan, you've also spoken about how important it is to be civil, how we have to return to government that's about policy and not about nastiness. Do you trust this woman to do that? She's going to not write any more emails now? She's not going to do the nasty stuff she has for years?
Under this president, of course I do. I think that she will do what this president wants, and she's not going to be the same person she was before. But I'm disturbed by this conversation. Not that it matters, but I am disturbed by it because I do believe that, you know, he has a right to make his picks, and we shouldn't be making decisions based on that somebody said something bad about us.
I kind of agree with Alan on this, but I think... You know, she certainly was bitter in her text, in her tweets about, you know, Mitch McConnell and Susan Collins. She said McConnell, she compared him to Voldemort on the Harry Potter series. And she, you know, she said Ted
All
Cruz
true.
Was...
the president said the same thing.
Than Ted Cruz. But this is an opportunity for both sides to do exactly what you said, Alan. If she is competent, and I'm going to accept that she's very capable in the budget areas, and that's important. If that is the case, that's how they should judge her. If she has taken down the tweets, she has pledged to get past it and said, I apologize. If she's done all that, and then she gets in there and starts doing it again, I'll bet she'd be fired in a heartbeat. And I bet she wouldn't. It would be an opportunity for both sides to bury the hatchet and try and see if we can make it work. And I think the Republicans are so hypocritical here. They let Trump get away with 4 years of horrible tweets, and now they're going to pick her to draw the line. I think it's a big mistake, and I think Tandon should be approved.
And, you know, the senators used to stand up and they used to say, I oppose this candidate because I find the candidate personally repugnant. Those were the exact words they always used. That meant, I don't like him, so I don't want him through. That's just wrong. Rosemary, what are you going to say?
No, I don't think it is wrong. I think there's nothing in the Constitution or in any rules or practice that we've seen for the last 200 years that says you only rule on competence. In fact, just the opposite. We've had plenty of incompetent judges put on the bench during the Trump years. So I certainly am not denying the absolute hypocrisy of the Republicans in this. They put on horrible people. But Joe Biden has pledged something new and different, something higher than we had. And that means he doesn't put nasty people. Have you seen her on television? She's been awful.
Right, but this is a chance. This is a chance to see if Biden can take somebody who has been vitriolic and convert them into being somebody who's more more of a professional. And if he can do that and demonstrate that with this appointment, I think that raises the bar and it might be good.
It also speaks to her background. You know, we have a chance to have somebody who is, she is Indian. She's Native American, right? Isn't that where this comes from? Am I wrong about this? What do we know about it? Well, but the point really is that, you know, this is petty politics and just not healthy.
JP?
Look, I don't think Joe can pull it off, even if it would be very nice. And it also, what you're suggesting, Mike, would also work the other way. It would be nice if Biden says, okay, I get your point. Here's somebody else. She is not irreplaceable. There are other diverse candidates in his cabinet. There are other economists who could do the job. And there are people who probably can do it better because they would get along better with a hostile Congress.
JP.
I'm a big believer in that the president of the United States should surround himself or herself with who they want. So I think that she should be approved. She's clearly qualified. It is not who I would pick to be my OMB director, but it is Biden's pick. I'm wondering, where is the first 100-day honeymoon? We used to have a 100-day honeymoon. A member of Joe Biden's own party, Joe Manchin, is going to derail this thing. I'm kind of shocked that Manchin's doing this. I think it's a harbinger for things to come. I think every piece of legislation now that comes through, every Supreme Court nominee that comes through, Joe Manchin basically has a veto on that legislation. Joe Manchin has a veto on that Supreme Court nominee. So that I find it shocking that Manchin isn't going to allow Biden to have this person be, his OMB director. I also think it's hopefully instructive to a whole generation of young political operatives who you see on Twitter every day sending out dozens of nasty vitriolic tweets. I hope that the young partisan operatives see Neera Tanden and say, gee, I guess because of my nasty tweets every day, I'm not going to be able to be approved by the Senate. I think people should really think twice about stuff that they say on Twitter.
So if not Tanden, who? Is there someone glaringly obvious in this?
Well, I was thinking they might nominate me. Then they would go to my positions, and I would not be confirmed.
Well, I think I don't know, Joe, who's on deck, and certainly they're looking at the people that they probably considered besides Tanden, but Tanden. But the it would be heartening to me if it could be seen as an opportunity to get past people's comments in the past and try to build new, and not just crucify people because they disagreed last year.
And there you go, right? And then we repeat, right? Isn't that what it's
yeah, right? Whatever. It's endless. Everybody said something that hurt somebody else's feelings. Is that really why?
I have a question for the panel.
Oh,
I have
good.
A question for the panel.
We have a minute.
In the past, I feel like sometimes presidents. I've heard of this or read of this, where they send up kind of what they call maybe a sacrificial lamb that they know will not get approved, and that's the one they'll focus on. Is there any thought that she may have, Biden may have known that she wouldn't get approved, but he put her up to maybe appease his the progressives?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think. Yeah, go ahead, please.
I think that's quite possible. And Manchin, you're the one who pointed this out, may even have been the reason for that. Manchin has absolutely made a play to be more powerful, more vocal than he ever has been in the legislature. And he is powerful right now. And he's in the middle of this the progressive and more conservative part of the party. And he knows that, and he's going to play it to the hilt. Again,
okay, 30...
I think Biden knows this and could very well have done that.
All right.
I don't agree. And when we come back, we can say that, right?
We will say it.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 35 minutes past 10 o'clock and our last moments together for this Tuesday morning, the 23rd of February. And we welcome your letters and our final moments panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So let us go in our final moments here. We have a couple of letters. I'll get to those.
Joe, if I could, I just wanted to say one thing based on what we said.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
The last round.
Yeah.
And believe me, you don't appoint somebody with the idea that they're gonna get turned down and you're gonna get credit for that. Nobody does that. And in politics, and I've been around for a long time, I'll tell you now that that is not the standard. So it's an interesting thought, but I really don't believe that was true.
Anyone on that? All right. Kate writes, the hideous side effect of the two-party system is the polarization along party lines at the expense of the citizenry. How can we break these political monopolies and generate a field of parties that truly reflect the diversity of the USA? Daisy writes, near attendant is fabulous. Come on, Rosemary. Joe Manchin voted for Jeff Sessions, and he is taking the high road now? Question mark. Rosemary?
Well, Jeff Sessions did not say nasty things about his friend Susan Collins, with whom he's plainly forming an alliance to be a negotiator. It's politics. She played on the wrong side, and I'm sitting here trying to find an example of where Alan is wrong, that somebody didn't put up someone knowing that they would be knocked down, not caring whether they'd be knocked down.
So this is the trial balloon argument, right? I mean.
No, the argument is that they put her up there. They'll get credit for having put up a diverse person.
Yeah.
And they don't care that she didn't win. She didn't get nominated. But, of course, they care. Because
correct.
It does not reflect well on
them. There's also another candidate that Biden has put up. The person he nominated to be the Department of Interior head is a Native American, and Deb Haaland. And she
that was my
she
confusion
is an
before.
Activist.
Sorry.
Yeah, she is an activist, and there's a lot of push to not approve her. And, you know, is this what it's going to be? It's going to be, I'm offended by the words someone used against me, and I'm not going to vote for her. Or is it going to be, I don't agree with their policy? I mean, you know, they want to have it both ways.
Tim, let's see. Do these in order. John says Biden should never have nominated her. Neera is a nightmare. I, for one, will be happy to see her go down. That is from John. Then we go to...
Yeah, John, I agree. I see her on TV and I turn it off. I think she's horrible.
Chris said Neera Tanden suggests...
Let's say she is...
Go ahead. Go ahead, JP.
Let's say she is so bad. Why wouldn't the Republicans approve her to give her a bigger platform?
Excuse me?
There's some logic to that. I get it. I mean, if they let her go through and then she becomes, you know, basically a Democrat version of Mick McGlarty there, whatever his name was, you know, and is hostile and continues the attacks, I think it's going to hurt Biden. And the Republicans have only to gain if that happens. And if she does a good job and shuts up and does a good job, we all benefit. So the Republicans
okay,
really
that's
should let
more,
her in.
That is more convoluted than a trial balloon.
We should call the bluff is what I'm saying.
Let's see. We go to Tim, who writes, possible that Biden put her in as a distraction. That was what we've been discussing. Erica says, all right, Rosemary, I agree. Her pettiness is a terrible look. It's immature and not anything we really need right now. Also, Amanda Gorman did an interview with Hillary Clinton, and she said because she wants to run for president, her entire squad, friends and family, keep her in check with her social media. She is 24 and knows better. Let's see. Jay writes, if you're promoting forgiveness for Tandon's social media post, does that mean the Marjorie Taylor Greene should be forgiven as well? No. What you say as someone who is striving to be a policymaker matters. President Biden should find someone else.
False equivalency.
Whoa. I mean, come on. This
false
is
equivalency.
Not, I want Nancy Pelosi dead.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, let's talk about. Like I mean, these false equivalencies are just unbelievable.
All right, let's go to Chris, who says Neera Tanden suggested that we bomb Libya and take their oil to pay for it. It's right there in the DNC email leak. She is a terrible person. It is not just about mean tweets.
It should be based on her record, and if that's true, I would certainly be troubled by it.
All right. Let's see. I think we have.
And I'll bet that's not exactly what she said.
I think that may be
taken out of context.
Go ahead.
Long ago, when I was entering management, I got this advice, which I would pass on to Nero, which is that in the world today, you have your choice. You can either say everything you want or you can do everything you want. She picked saying.
Yeah.
Which one did
saying
you pick?
The consequences for it. Oh, I picked saying. I can't help myself. You know that.
Let's see.
I would not expect to get Sue Collins' vote. I would know I wasn't going to get it. I would, when Joe said to me, hey, I want you to be my budget director, I would say, well, I have a small problem, Joe. How are we going to deal with this? I would love to have known how they discussed this.
So don't worry, I'll handle it, he said.
So in our few moments that we have left, in our four or five moments that we have left, Merrick Garland was at a confirmation hearing yesterday, vows to fight domestic extremism. You spoke about this briefly, Rosemary, but Garland is the nominee for attorney general and also said that he believed that investigating the Capitol riot would be a top priority for him as attorney general. So looking at it, how do you think it went? Alan?
I think it went extremely well for Garland. He's a guy who made his case. He did it seriously. The references to the anti-Semitism that his parents had faced, his grandparents had faced, was very winning. And I thought that his, emotional, people are mentioning the fact that he got emotional during that time. I'm all for it. I think it was great. And one thing that I think all those senators will know is that if he is telling them that he's going to play it straight and narrow, and that he's going to be a lawyer as opposed to a provocateur, which we all know his people, the Trump people, were, they were satisfied with it because they don't want to be in the same spot the Democrats were in the last time.
JP?
I'm a huge Merrick Garland fan. I think if he was qualified to be enough to be a Supreme Court justice, which he clearly was, this is a step down for him, to be frank, to be Attorney General. And I think it's a phenomenal pick by Joe Biden. He's going to get bipartisan support. Lindsey Graham and John Cornyn have already signaled that they're going to vote for him. I think it's a great pick, and it's a very important job to help restore all of our beliefs in the rule of law going forward over the next 4 years.
And a very powerful job. Think about it for a second. You're somebody who may have done something wrong, Lindsey Graham or somebody like that. Do you really want to be on record opposing him?
Oh, you're right.
Good point. Because our listeners will, they'll call you out for voting for Jeff Sessions years after you did it. All right, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody who was with us and for being here this morning. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Rosemary, JP, and Mike Spain, always good to have you aboard.
Thank
we
you.
Will continue our conversation after this short break.